You are listening to a Campfire Firecast.
Welcome to our first Firecast. This is your fire starter, Pete Lawrence, bringing you the best from the Campfire community. Lots going on at the moment after our launch online last month. Have a look at the Bugle just to see the extent of the creativity and talent already stepping up to contribute features. This Firecast brings you members' high fives. We ask you to talk about what you're up to in under 5 minutes. And we hear from Bruce Bickerton about his house move and his new Elucid Nation album project. We discuss the food industry, described as a perfect storm of politics and fashion, by Richard Garnett from Somerset's Community Farm, where we hope to be doing an event next summer. But we kick off with our patron Brian Eno about what attracted him to come to our event last summer, where he delivered a pretty perfect keynote speech, and the wealth of new social ideas he's already encountered around our campfire. Let the sparks fly.
Hello, I'm Brian Eno. I'm here at the Campfire Convention, and I guess I came here because I'm sort of interested in new social ideas, in new ideas of how we can run the world, how we can think differently about things. And I see right now the complete collapse of conventional politics, which looks more like business than usual than it usually does. I see the parties at war within themselves about the same few questions, which don't seem to me even to be the right questions. And so I suppose I'm coming to look for somewhere where people are starting to think about different and bigger questions.
Who are you?
My name is Indra Adnan. Is that enough?
Describe yourself in 5 words.
Excited, complex, global citizen, connected, warrior.
What are you up to?
I'm a co-initiator of a new political platform called The Alternative. We are trying to create or give rise to a new politics for the 98% of people who are not currently members of political parties. And what we see is a lot of desire for more autonomy, more control over people's circumstances, a shift in power from the national level down to the local and municipal levels, and we'd like to serve that.
How is campfire for you?
Loving campfire. Everything must start with a conversation, and it must start with a conversation in a place where people feel that they're at home and they have some identity with. So it's the data. It's the data that we need to build a new politics from.
Who would you invite to your campfire?
My campfire would be one person from every country in the world. That would be my ideal, because we need to build a sense of global citizenship. So there's, you know, there's the grassroots, there's the municipal level, but then there's this new transnational level that needs to be better understood. And for me, a beautiful campfire would be with one person from every country in the world.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So we've got Bruce Bickerton here, and we're about to do a podcast interview. Okay, hi Bruce.
Hello.
Who are you?
Well, you just told me who I am. I'm Bruce Bickerton. Bruce Simon Bickerton, to be exact.
Describe yourself in 5 words.
It's tricky, isn't it, really?
I'm saying nothing.
Well, what I do is design, photography, music, radio, and all right, bloke.
That's good. What are you up to?
What am I up to? I've spent most of this year moving house again. We've moved house a lot recently. in the past 2.5 years. We've moved, this is the third move. The whole process of moving is a bit of a ball ache because I've got a studio. So every time I've moved, I've had to sort of take it all to bits and then reassemble it the other end. And which, yeah, is a bit of a nuisance, but every time I've done it, I've kind of changed things subtly, you know, sort of what in terms of the wiring, the configuration, the ergonomics. So this time around, I think I've got a pretty good idea of how things should sit in the studio. So yeah, that's my next project, to get all that wired up and start making some music again, which I've, you know, obviously miss. It's quite funny that when you don't have the tools to hand to actually create the stuff, you have all these nice ideas and you can't get any of it down. So hopefully by the time I've finished wiring everything up, I'll remember what I thought of doing. I've been busy this year as well, amongst other things, with a new Kickstarter project for my new record, which did very well. I had to raise quite a lot of money this time because it's a double gatefold vinyl as well as CD download and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, a hit target pretty fast, thanks to all my supporters. And so yeah, that's coming out when I get back from holiday. We're going out to Paros. So when I get back, I'm going to get busy getting all this stock finished and ready. Although the CDs have proved a bit problematic because the people I've ordered from have messed up on the order a couple of times. But hey, I'm sure it'll get sorted.
You won't name check them.
No. Be rude.
How's Campfire for you?
Campfire's great. Although, you know, by my own admission, I'm not really a massive fan of social media. I actually left Facebook last year due to various things. I found I was wasting a lot of time. I'm one of these people who sort of has to be busy all the time, which is a bit of a nuisance. And I found that any spare time I did have, I was just sat there reading about what other people were doing. So, which, I don't know if that's a bad thing or not. But anyway, I left Facebook back in September of last year. And I don't really get on to Campfire very often. But when I do, it's good to have a, like, you know, a scout round, have a look what's going on. I've written a few bits and pieces, and I will continue to write the odd piece for the site. But yeah, it's something that when I do get more time to myself, once I've done the move and all that, I will probably make more use of.
And who would you invite round your campfire?
Primarily just close friends and family, really. Some people I feel comfortable with and I'm able to talk with freely, in a nutshell.
Sam, thanks very much.
You are listening to a Campfire Firecast.
So, who are you?
Well, my name is Kim Fernley. Oh, I don't know who I am.
Describe yourself in 5 words.
Courageous, adventurous, interested, passionate, compassionate. Is that 5? Okay.
What are you up to?
Right now. Doing this and going out for lunch somewhere. And after that, who knows?
How's Campfire for you?
Campfire has been very interesting, and I have enjoyed meeting lots of new people, and I'm excited about the possibilities that it holds and the diversity of the people and the subjects, and I'm learning a lot from it. So I'm really enjoying it.
Who would you invite to your campfire?
To my campfire, my best friends, really. I wouldn't have any sort of diva celebrities or anything like that. So people that I love, people who laugh a lot, and maybe someone who can play guitar.
So, who are you?
Louise Scrivens.
Describe yourself in 5 words.
Scatty, a mum, creative, passionate and a bit mad.
What are you up to?
At the moment, I'm at the Good Life Experience, finding out about how bars are run. And in general, I'm trying to help my husband start a microbrewery, starting up a food assembly, contributing to the campfire, and looking after my kids.
How is campfire for you?
It's suddenly really taken off like a rocket, and sometimes I find I've haven't got enough time to read all the articles, and I want to because most of them are really interesting.
And who would you invite to your campfire?
I'd be really selfish and invite all my ancestors because I want to know where I came from.
See? Thank you. In July, I visited the community farm just outside Chew Magna, south of Bristol, a possible venue for a campfire event next summer, and I spoke to Ped Asgarian and Richard Garnett. I kicked off by asking Richard about food, which he tellingly described as a perfect storm of fashion and politics. Food production is now so geared towards making profits for shareholders and corporations that in a sense it's lost sight of its primary purpose, nourishment, well-being and feeding our world at its most basic level. We discussed how fashion and politics are shaping what we consume and how important the choices we make are in keeping us connected with the land and our communities.
Coming in from the more corporate side, you know you see some of the marketing stuff happens and the way that it's communicated and how that communication isn't really linked with farming, and it seems to be purposely kept, you know, a lot of ambiguity there to create these opportunities for businesses to make their profit out of, but then because that communication's kind of broken down, those resources aren't getting put back onto the land, and we've got this continuous kind of decline in yields, and the weather doesn't help. I mean, this year has been particularly strange. The plants, you can see it on the plants, you know, they have a way of communicating, and the way that they flower and go to fruit, and they're confused. But I think ultimately I just thought it was going to be better organised. I thought that there was going to be a bit more dynamicness between all of the different elements of food distribution. But I do feel that there's a level of purposeful ambiguity. Organics is really interesting, and the reality is what people believe organic is, and the importance and the reality, you know, the reality of how important organic is for the next generation. And that seems like a bit of a marketing ploy for the end user and not so much for the producer. A lot of the producers I talk to have some real issues with certification and the way that that process, the expense of it and bits like that. So I think, this is why I personally joined a not-for-profit organisation. I don't think food should particularly have a profit attached to it. I think people should earn money out of it and definitely be able to achieve the lifestyles they want to. I think, you know, people making such huge profits out of food and then not really telling the truth about it is one of the problems that we try to deal with at the farm. Just allowing people to come and experience the difference and the level of manpower it takes in the organics industry. I mean, these are jobs and people need jobs. So, yeah, I think there's some really interesting things happening. And Brexit will certainly accelerate that process.
Right on cue, we have a tractor.
With purposely done.
Yeah, it's worth talking about the profits, because it's what people do with the profits, isn't it? That's the key, really. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with making a profit.
No, not at all.
Feel free to join in the discussion.
Well, there's nothing wrong with making a profit. We're a not-for-profit organisation, but you can't survive if you don't make a profit.
Yeah.
That's the underlying fact here. If you're planning on, if you're talking about, I don't know, capitalism in some respects, then yeah, I mean, it's not a terrible thing, capitalism, but capitalism should be done with a very strong social slant, shouldn't it? It should be, there's nothing wrong with Marxist capitalism, with the idea of creating organisations that can put significant funds back into society and looking after people. I mean, it's incredibly important.
I think a lot of these business leaders, you know, fundamentally want to do good things. They just haven't got the framework, and society hasn't set up the frameworks to allow them. And I think you're totally right. I think if you remove the profit from being the main motivator and you put it into something else, these people will still be high achievers. They'll still want to get that kudos, so they'll still push hard. But then, you know, like you've indicated, that reward is in a slightly different format. Well, I think, like I was saying, that story about the girl I met who worked for the IPCC, and she was having a bit of a existential crisis, as it were. She's working for a very large organisation, a very important one, you know, trying to steer the EU in the right direction. But as a group of people involved in the social kind of elements, there's not enough support for one another's. And it was really interesting, because when she was talking and when I was talking about what I do, and she could see some of the real life results from some of those things, there was a real disconnect. And I think within the social kind of the social sector, we forget that people need emotional support.
Yeah.
You put a lot of energy into these things. This is why you get such burnout. Mm. You know, these people get overwhelmed by these problems and they feel isolated. And I think something like Campfire can actually, you know, we can start appreciating these people. And that's all they want, is a recognition that they, you know, you're doing a great job, thanks ever so much, that society does care and we do care about you. I mean, you know, we're both interested in social housing as well. You know, when you sacrifice so much of your life to the social projects and then you're struggling to pay rent and society pushes you to the fringes of kind of survival, as it were, and you know, how do we, and they don't want much, these people don't want a great deal, they just want to be safe and feel safe and need access to small houses. And even with the land that people buy, they don't put up fences, they're all about sharing and people coming onto the land. And it was interesting chatting to her, because it was for me personally, it was a whole different spectrum of the social kind of industries that I hadn't really thought about, those huge side of it, where people in suits are discussing millions of people's lives. And, you know, do they have a grounding in reality? Do they really see the consequences? And you're talking about people doing these projects. Well, who are you talking about? You're talking about field workers and people on the lowest end of wages. And we need to offer them, if that's what we can pay them from a resource point of view, well, we can support them in other ways through social projects and offering them some of the other, the free things of society. But then they feel guilty about taking them. But we need to try, I think, we need to try and relieve that guilt and allow people to, you know, dedicate their lives and look after these people who want to dedicate their lives to take up the slack of governments to some degree. You know, corporations aren't giving the money back, and taxes, you know, is the only way that a lot of these projects survive. Mm. You know, well, why aren't the corporations paying for these projects? They're the ones taking the resources.
It's all about their shareholders' profits, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the point where everything else just gets pushed down.
But there's a lot of creativity in the social industries. Because of lack of resource, lack of funds, you have to think creatively. And that means, you know, all businesses need creativity to create new markets, new products. And so there is a feedback there. But when we departmentalise everybody and there's not enough cross-communication, people are going off and starting these projects where there's already projects that they could get involved in and support, and we're constantly undermining them. I think there's, having a system where we can communicate, and that communication is open and clear. Each of these industries have their own technical languages, don't they? And there has to be some type of translation across them.
And connections. As you say, it's everyone's doing things in isolation, but there's a lot of synergy. And how do we, again, I hope Campfire can pull those strands together and create resources where people can say, well, this is a must go to place where I can find out about who's doing stuff in this area.
Yeah.
And we've now got the beacons and the maps happening, so a project can have a pin in a map. So geographically we can locate stuff as well.
I think that's really interesting. I think a lot of the times people are political tourists. They move to an area, they're still politically active, but politically active in a national way, and yet nobody's looking after the water in their local areas. Mm. Nobody concentrates on the local politics.
That's a real bugbear of mine at the moment. People are not engaging in what's going on locally around them, because it's one thing just to think, oh, you know, every 4 years I'll vote for my local MP and that's my bit done. To have no idea to think about how, like, you know, I do things in Bath for transition, and then we get involved, you know, we go to council meetings, we're meeting cabinet members, we're trying to, you know, change Bath for the better, but there's so many processes, there's so many meetings to go to, there's so many times you have to stand up and put your point across, and you have to engage in it, and if most people aren't engaging, then it makes no difference. And you get, like, there was a Green candidate in Bath who stepped down in one of the wards, and not enough people really connecting with the voting that's going on in this ward, let the new councillor. The new councillor that got in on 20% of the vote, you know, of the ward,
yeah.
who voted her in, and you're like, just 20%. So no, it's 20% turnout, and all of that, she got the majority. Mm. And you're like, how is that? Like, why aren't you connecting? It's so important. Everything that happens, if you think your MP is going to have an impact on what you're doing in your local area, how your bin collections are going to work, how your rubbish collection is going to work,
yeah.
how your recycling is going to work, all of this, you're joking. It's your local people, and you need to get involved.
Yeah, definitely. I think people need to make some, you know, real decisions about what's important to them, and then focus on those, you know, and use their political power to focus on those key. Yeah. Those key kind of areas, and then that would that would give a lot more power to local MPs if they knew that they had support, local support. It would make their jobs a lot easier. But I was just listening to the radio just on the way up, and the MP in Bristol, who's just taken over social care, but she's never been involved in social care ever before, and she's only been doing it for 4 months, and it's that constant restarting.
Mm.
And you think, well, you know, what are you there to do? In reality, these people, you know, really need your support, and you can't just constantly be putting commissions together to reinvent the system. There's got to be some type of longitude, you know, lengthy process here. And I mean, that's the thing for us, is that with the community farm, is it specifically, you know, access to nutritional food and education for people being able to learn to look after themselves and to reduce their costs and their wastes. And, you know, food just is for us is a nice kind of perfect storm, as it were, of fashion and politics and a requirement. It's you know, everybody needs food, so it's a very passionate subject, food, so you can really communicate with people, because they have a fundamental understanding, human beings, of nature, that we are natural beings at the end of the day. We've just lost it a little bit. But when they see it, and hence, you know, wanting to talk to you guys and get people on the farm, when you have these conversations in the area that you're talking about, it has so much more power that people can understand that actually this is a delicate environment that we need to maintain for the future generations. And it's a viable solution. This is the key, I think, for a lot of these projects, is, you know, we talk about them, and then when you try to upscale them, they become very difficult. But one thing the farm tries to do is create a sustainable model that can be transferred, that the community can use it. You diversify, you add in education and all these other elements, that people come and use the land for all sorts of things, the corporate days out, for instance, and things like that. It's a solution, where a lot of the time, as you mentioned about that book, that you can criticise the system, but nobody's putting forward the solution. And well this is a solution, where you can come out to the land, pick the food, your kids can be educated here, we can support some of the the more vulnerable sides of our society, and you don't need to pay higher taxes, and you don't need to pay for these huge institutions to take that responsibility. Very, we can you know, distribute that responsibility throughout the population, and everybody can be responsible for one another. So I think and putting those forums in those places, people suddenly get it. So actually, what we can actually do this. This is actually sustainable. Yeah. And I think nice thing about Campfire is using technology. I think the only way we can compete with these big corporations is if, as social sector, that we really grasp technology for communication and building networks. And then, of course, that gives us the facilities to compete against the bigger corporations, which ultimately, that's all they are. They integrate technology to create efficiency. And we have the same capacities now. You can use Facebooks and the things like that to communicate, and you can have online sales, and you can, you know, you're always going to pay a little bit for that infrastructure, but so much more money then can go back to the producers rather than it being the middleman and the transportation and all of those elements. So.
You're listening to a Campfire Firecast.
Hi, I'm Mia Manners. I live in Angel Islington, London. I grew up on a farm near Swindon in Wiltshire, and I'm committed and passionate about the pause between outcomes and what gets us to do things in the beginning.
Describe yourself in 5 words.
Mad, vital, calm, compassionate, and funny.
What are you up to?
I'm here at the Good Life Experience with Campfire Convention. We have been discussing politics, does it work, and what people can put onto the table around changing the conversation. And it's been pretty successful. Fear has underpinned a lot of the reasons why I don't get up and become the most successful person I am. I think that's the most interesting question. So now I just try to take deep breaths, meditate as much as I can, and then I can go at and out into the world. I think we're living in really interesting times, and I'm so glad to be alive at this time, because I can see the end of an old paradigm collapsing all around. I believe that the individual is sovereign and noble and has total empowerment to the soul of who they are, and every single person is different. Like nature, every plant is different, every blade of grass is different. We are like nature. We are nature. And I think we forgot to put the natural world into a synthetic world.
How is Campfire for you?
It's really good. We've got a campfire right next to me. It's really warm. I like the fact that there is something tangible or not, and real and physical about people talking to each other, touching each other, like me touching you now, you know? We can all hide behind our computers and smartphones and screens and telephones and what have you, and it just doesn't give the bigger picture of who we are. I think what Campfire Conventions and Campfire Ideals do is it allows us to listen to somebody talking about what they believe in and what they're interested in.
Staging of our second Campfire Convention event in London is timely. The speed of change around us is accelerating. It's time to take stock. It's also the week that I'm celebrating my 60th birthday. I can't believe how the years have flown by, but I still have that burning passion and sense of mission I discovered in my 30s. Our idea behind the convention is to challenge and push for new approaches. Change at all levels, from personal to community, from political to global. The ethos, values and principles of Campfire are based around not letting go of hope. It has to come down to giving people a sense of engagement and empowerment, both individually for each of our members and collectively for our community, and a belief that we can make a difference and that the world can be a better place. Campfire can be many things: an alternative journalistic voice, a means to portfolio our key interests and enthusiasms, a platform for connection and collaboration, an ad-free forum for chat and the shaping of new agendas. Together we can craft something of great value,
a resource built on collective wisdom and templates of experience. Politics dies without imagination. People die without nourishment. Hope dies without community. More than ever, we need to make a connection between dreams and pragmatism. That's how we'll make a difference. That's how we already are making a big difference. Sparks are igniting, beacons are being lit. We have to believe in ourselves as a force for change. We have to believe in a movement that has the potential to reach out beyond party lines, a message that appeals to as many as possible.
You have been listening to a Campfire Firecast.
Thanks for listening up. In the next Firecast, we'll be reviewing our second convention event, which takes place all day on Saturday, November the 4th, at London's Union Chapel, with a social in the evening. Tickets are limited, but still available online from our website. Remember, we're now open for new members, so come and join us around the campfire at www.campfireconvention.com.